Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Inyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer. And Bob, there's a story in the Bible that I've always loved, yeah. And there's a lot of archaeological evidence for it, and it's Jericho. And it's the account of Israel attacking Jericho, yeah. And yeah. All the walls fell flat.
Yeah, but the atheists disagree?
Yeah, the atheists dispute that. They claim that Jericho had been destroyed, but not by Israel. And
in the wrong century.
In the wrong century, and they claim the date's wrong and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we were very honored to have a guest at our Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship group. Dr. Bryant Wood flew out for our group, and he's a leading archaeologist and gave a talk on it, and it was just powerful.
Fred, what I did to prepare for this show, I mean, it's real hard these days, you know, you Google.
Yeah.
So I Googled Jericho excavation, and I got 170,000 pages that talk about those two words.
And you read through about 100,000 of them?
Mostly.
Okay.
And the number two site is Bible Archaeology. And what is exciting about that is an article by Dr. Bryant Wood, who is the director of the Associates for Biblical Research. And what an honor it is to have Dr. Wood on Real Science Radio. Dr. Wood, you're on with Fred Williams and Bob Inyart.
I'm glad to be with you.
Well, thank you for joining us. So, Dr. Wood, it seems true that when I look at this topic, I see skeptics and atheists saying that the evidence is against the Bible's report that the Israelites came up against Jericho and the walls fell down and all the story that we read in the Bible. So could you help us think through what is the truth and what's myth?
Oh, sure. Be glad to. You know, there's always two sides to every coin. So let's look at the other side.
All right. Good. So, Dr. Wood, if we could begin with the city itself. The Bible speaks of the city of Jericho and that it was destroyed. It seems obvious that archaeologists for a long time have been looking in the ruins of a city that they say is the biblical Jericho. So could you tell us about the city?
It's interesting that the excavations go way back to the beginnings of archaeology in the land of Palestine. The first city to be excavated, of course, was Jerusalem. But the next place that the archaeologists wanted to go to was Jericho. Even in those early days in the 1800s, they had a pretty good idea where it was located in the southern Jordan Valley. It's really the only candidate. Nobody's ever disputed the location of the site. And so excavations began there, I think it was in 1878 or something like that, way back. And since then, there's been a number of major expeditions to the site. And in fact, it's being excavated today. And they have found a rather substantial city, very heavily fortified. It's surrounded by a very strong wall plus a rampart type of system. You know how the sites in the Middle East build up over time, layer upon layer, as one city after another is destroyed and rebuilt and so on. And so it builds up into what we call a tell or a ruin heap.
Mm-hmm.
And at Jericho today, there is a big hill there. But it's all ancient ruins built
now, Dr.
one
Wood,
on top of the other.
With our audience, we've taken a Bible tour of a different country every few years, and we've gone to Israel 3 times. And so there are these tells, like in Megiddo and elsewhere. So you look on the landscape, you see this hill, and you might think it's natural, but it turns out there was a city there, it was destroyed, then another city built on its ruins. And that might happen a dozen times or more over 1,000 or thousands of years, and you end up with a hill.
Sure, artificial hill.
Yeah, these are amazing things for us in America. We're not used to tells mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you mentioned that it was a strongly fortified city, that's what the archaeology is showing. And the Bible mentions that, you know, at least a couple places that Jericho was strongly fortified. So right there, we've got one piece of evidence that corroborates what the Bible says about Jericho.
Sure.
But then what else? Because in the scriptures, we read about Rahab. Her house is peculiar. It sounds peculiar to me living in Colorado because she lived sort of on the wall of the city. So what would that mean, Dr. Wood, that someone would live on the wall?
The translators of the Old Testament didn't really understand the situation of her house. And if you'll check translations, you'll see different ways that the Hebrew phrase is translated. Her house was on the wall, it was in the wall, in the corner of the wall, various things. In the Hebrew, it says, Bekir HaHoma. Now, we didn't really understand how to translate that until the archaeologists excavated at Jericho. And now we understand that the city was surrounded by this rampart that I mentioned, all the way around an embankment, and there were actually two city walls, one at the crest of this embankment, going around what you might call the upper city, and then at the base of that rampart was another mud brick wall, and that rampart was supported by a stone revetment wall, it's called, or just the retaining wall, actually. The Germans, who excavated in the early 1900s, discovered many houses built on the embankment between the lower wall and the upper wall. Wow. And some of those houses were, in fact, built against the lower wall. And with that understanding, now we can translate this phrase, Bekir HaHoma, as against the surface of the city wall. Her house was built against the inner surface of the city wall. And of course, you remember from the account of the spies, they went to Rahab's house, she hid them. Then they made this agreement with her that if she would save them from the king and his men that were looking for them, they would save her. And she let them out of her house through an opening in the wall, we're told. Mm-hmm. And they climbed down a rope, and they were immediately on the outside of the city then. And of course, then the spies had asked her to put this red rope in her window, which could be seen from outside when the Israelites attacked. That way they would know which house was hers, and they went in and saved Rahab and her family, who they had instructed to come to your house, stay there, and don't go outside because the rest of the city is going to be destroyed.
Wow. This wall that you've been speaking of, there's actually these different parts of it. It's a significant sized wall. The thickness of it and the height, obviously this was a significant city in antiquity, and they were determined to keep it safe.
Hey, absolutely. And in fact, once you understand this fortification system, there's no way, humanly speaking, that the Israelites could have penetrated it. It took a miracle from God.
Because the wall now, it's no longer standing, but that's not unusual. But this wall obviously collapsed. But the Bible says that Rahab was saved. She had to stay in her house. So wouldn't she have been destroyed also when the wall collapsed?
Yeah, that's a good question, because of course, when the Israelites had marched around the city for 7 days and seven times on the seventh day, then God brought those walls down right at the time of that last trip around the walls, and the priests blew the trumpets and so on. And so the Bible says the walls fell down. And here again, the biblical description, the Hebrew words used there, are very precise. It says that the walls fell takath ha in the Hebrew, which literally means beneath themselves. Well, almost all translations say the walls fell flat. Well, that's pretty good, but it's not precise. The Hebrew says they fell beneath themselves. Well, I've described this rampart around the city, and the one wall at the base and another wall at the crest. Well, the wall at the base was not at ground level because there was a very high retaining wall that hold the earthen embankment in place. That retaining wall is about 15 feet high, made of stone, goes right down to bedrock. And then on top of that stone retaining wall mm-hmm. was a mud brick wall about 6 feet thick and about, well, we can say maybe three times that in height. And so this is what the Israelites were facing. First, this stone wall, 15 feet high. Then this mud brick wall, maybe 20 feet high, a very steep embankment up to another mud brick wall at the crest of the Tell. So the Bible says that wall fell takatha, beneath itself. It was the mud brick walls that collapsed, the upper one sliding down that embankment and the lower one just falling off over the stone retaining wall. And the archaeologists have actually found the collapsed mud bricks at the base of that stone retaining wall. Mm. Well, when you read that, you say, wow, you know, if that wall was destroyed all around the city, then how could Rahab's house have been preserved? Again, archaeology provides an answer because when the Germans excavated this embankment and found these buildings and houses on the embankment between the two walls, they discovered that at the north end of the Tell, that for a short distance, the wall stood. Everywhere else they excavated around the city, the walls had collapsed.
So there's one portion that did not collapse, and all this other part of the wall collapsed, fell flat is a loose translation. But boy, this is to me was the highlight when you came and spoke to us in our group was this is precisely matches the Bible. You know, how could you say otherwise? And I don't think the secularists dispute this, right? This is overwhelming. Nobody disputes this fact.
Oh, yes. It's in the archaeological record. And now, what they dispute, of course, as you pointed out at the beginning of the show, is the dating mm-hmm. of this event. No one argues that there was no destruction because it's very clear. There was first collapsing of the walls. The evidence suggests earthquake. And then that was followed by the burning of the city. And both events are described in the Bible, and that's very clear in the archaeological record. Now, what's at issue is, well, did it happen at the time the Bible says it happened? And that's where the controversy comes in.
Well, there is this archaeologist who's no longer with us. She's passed away, but Kathleen Kenyon. And she spent some years excavating Jericho, and she became world famous because of her work. And it was interesting to me that once she was done, normally you'd then publish your findings. It seems that she did not rush to put out a final report of her findings. Do I have that right, Dr. Wood, or no?
Well, yes, yeah, she passed away in 1978. And the first report didn't come out until the early 80s, I forget, 83 or something like that. Now, she did publish one report on some tombs she had excavated.
Right.
And that was fine, but that had nothing to do with the city itself, only indirectly.
And then she did her work in the 1950s.
Yes.
And she's world famous for the Jericho excavation she did. And so it'd be like somebody went to the moon and never did the report to tell us what they found on the moon.
Right.
To me, I'm just the talk show host and the pastor of Denver Bible Church, but it's a bit surprising to me that Kathleen Kenyon did not make sure that her final report was done promptly after they finished their excavation.
Well, unfortunately, that's the great sin of archaeologists is they do the field work, but they never get their reports out. No, not all archaeologists are like that, of course.
Right.
But because you recover so much data and it takes so much time to process the data and to analyze it and so on, that many archaeologists die before they get the job done. Mm. But in Kenyon's case, fortunately, she had people who had worked with her and were familiar with all of her notes and records and so on, and they took that material and then they did publish it. Now, the interesting thing about the publication, and I would blame Kathleen Kenyon for this, is that there is no analysis of the data. They have just presented raw data in the excavation reports. usually an archaeologist would analyze the data and give us the dating of the various layers based on a study of the pottery. Well, she came up with dates, but she never published any basis for the dates. And we get that from the pottery, of course. That's what we depend upon for dating. That's what I specialized in when I did my PhD thesis. And so that's how I got involved in this whole Jericho issue, is I was looking at the pottery from Jericho, and I found that it did not square with the date she claimed for that destruction.
Well, could you explain that? Because she also became famous, I say famous, but from the secular media, because they like whenever they could report something against the biblical record. And so she said, the pottery shows us that this was not in the time of Joshua. So the destruction of Jericho was in the wrong century. It was too early.
Yes. She came to that conclusion. She said that it was destroyed 150 years prior to the time of Joshua and the conquest. That would put you back to around 1550 BC. And she said the Egyptians destroyed the city. Well, there's no evidence for that. And in fact, her dating was way off. It's interesting that the previous archaeologist who worked there, John Garstang, who excavated in the 1930s.
He was a Brit, right? British?
Yes, both of them actually were from England. And John Garstang had clear evidence that that destruction took place at the end of the 15th century BC. In round numbers, around 1400, we can calculate the exact date from the data we have in the Old Testament, and we know that it was 1406 BC. Precisely, of course, pottery dating is only approximate, but certainly we can tell the difference between 1550 and 1400 BC. So, to make a long story short, Garstang was entirely correct in his analysis of the pottery in that destruction level. Kenyon totally ignored his work, and she came up with her date based on the lack of a particular type of pottery imported from Cyprus. Because she did not find that pottery in the destruction level, she said the destruction had to have occurred prior to the use of this pottery, which was popular in the 1400s BC.
So this Cypriot two-tone pottery, Fred, what are you thinking?
What I recall is that she was digging in the poor part of the city where this pottery would not be found.
Yes, that's true. There was a little bit found. Garstang found a fair amount of that bicolored pottery, but I had some of that tested, and it's not actually imported from Cyprus, but it's imitation Cypriot ware locally made, but it looks exactly the same. And for dating purposes, we know that type of pottery was used only in the second half of the 15th century BC. In other words, just around the time of the Exodus and the conquest.
So that the pottery that Kathleen Kenyon said, well, it couldn't be in the time of Jericho because they didn't have the right kind of pottery. Well, when her report comes out after her death, we find out that they did have that kind of pottery. In fact, it was a ripoff, so sort of like getting a fancy watch or a purse, and it's a copy of it.
Right, right. So she based her argument on a lack of evidence, on silence, actually, rather than analyzing the pottery she did excavate. She just based it on the fact she didn't have this well-recognized imported pottery, and you wouldn't even expect it in that poor part of the town that she was excavating.
You know, and what I've found so interesting about this is, you know, we've already checked off, I think, four or five things that support the Bible. A city that was strongly fortified. We now have an explanation for Rahab's house. We mentioned that the city was burned. Well, Joshua 6:20 says that the city was burned. And there's so many more that we haven't talked about. Like, for example, I like the jars full of grain.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask you that, Dr. Wood. When archaeologists excavate an ancient city, how common is it that they would find storehouses, jars that still have grain in them from thousands of years ago? Is that common?
That's very rare because of the fact that if a city is destroyed by some conquering king, he would plunder the grain because that was valuable. And the Egyptian records are just full of records of their conquering Canaanite cities, and they would come just after the harvest time, or just before or right around harvest time, so they could harvest the fields themselves, or if the local people harvested it, they would plunder the grain and other things that had been harvested.
Mm-hmm. Plus, they get the benefit of the people of Jericho wouldn't have jars full of grain.
Sure. And no one would just leave that valuable grain in the jars if they were going to set fire to the city and destroy it. They would clean it out first. But of course, in the Bible, we read that the Israelites were commanded not to plunder Jericho. Mm. They were to take the precious metals out, but that was for the Lord's treasury. That was not for the Israelites themselves. So Jericho was sort of an offering to the Lord, the first fruits, the first city to be conquered in the land of Canaan. And so they were specifically commanded, do not plunder Jericho. Sure enough, when the archaeologists excavated, they found that the harvest had been taken in at Jericho, and the grain had been placed in jars. And Garstang and Kenyon both found that in every house, every building they excavated, many jars full of grain.
Wow, that is, and for something to be a rare phenomenon, and then to find it in dwelling after dwelling, that seems to be a significant affirmation of corroboration of that particular detail in the Bible.
And so why would you reject all of this evidence because you have some questionable dating that's gone on? I know they've also done some C-14 dating, and, you know, we've talked about that mechanism on the show quite a bit through the years, and you know, even that's not real reliable. And I think, I can't remember if it was from your website, Dr. Wood, but I know that Italian team that excavated out there, I think in 2000, they got C-14 anywhere from 1688 to 1262 BC. So their dates, it shows you how wide the discrepancy is. But nevertheless, even their dates, the biblical account would fit within it.
Oh, yes. But the pottery nails it down
exactly.
For us.
The pottery,
even
is the key.
Some scarabs that Garstang found in the cemetery have the names of pharaohs on them
now
from the 15th century BC, and that series abruptly stops at the end of the 15th century BC. Plenty of evidence for the dating that would match with the biblical date.
So a scarab in Egypt, they seem to be obsessed with beetles. And they took these beetles and they would make things like seals for their important papers, and they would make ornamental scarabs, and they often would put an indication of who was the pharaoh of the time when they made these scarabs. So, Dr. Wood, you're saying that the scarabs that were found could be correlated with the pharaohs of the time of Joshua and his conquest, but not afterward.
That's correct, yes. We have a scarab of Hatshepsut, very famous queen of Egypt in the early 15th century BC, and then several of Thutmose III, the next pharaoh, Amenhotep III. We have a nice series there that just suddenly stops when the city was destroyed.
Well, here at Real Science Radio, we're selling scarabs of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. So we're talking with Dr. Bryant Wood, the director of the Associates for Biblical Research. Dr. Wood, how about the bigger picture where Joshua is leading the Israelites? He's a general at God's command. Go in and take the land of Canaan. Would Jericho be in a position where you'd have to take that city in order then to get at the land of Canaan?
Yes, that's exactly right. It's the gateway, basically, coming from the east. And, of course, the Israelites had come up along the east side of the Dead Sea. They had camped on the north end of the Dead Sea, the plains of Moab there. They miraculously crossed the Jordan River when the Lord stopped up the waters, dammed up the waters some distance to the north. And so as they came across, that was right on the road to the interior. And so they had to capture Jericho and gain control of that important guarding point, if you would, fortified city guarding that entry into Canaan. Once they had taken Jericho, then they had free access to the hill country, the high country where they subsequently campaigned and conquered that whole area. And that's where they settled, was in the highlands of Canaan.
We only have a couple minutes left, but Jericho is also considered one of the world's oldest cities, if not the oldest major city. And so here we have, from the history of the world, the first well-known city is a city that confirms the veracity of the Bible's account.
Yeah, many times over. I mean, I think you've got a good list on your website. And again, we've talked about it, but I'd like to summarize them. The city was strongly fortified. There's three different places in Joshua that mention that. The attack occurred just after harvest time or right near it in the spring. We know that from archaeology and plus three different places in the Bible. The inhabitants had no opportunity to flee with foodstuffs. Joshua 6:1, confirmed by archaeology. The siege was short. Joshua 6:15, confirmed by archaeology. The walls were leveled, possibly by an earthquake. Joshua 6:20. The city was not plundered, that we just talked about. Fascinating. Joshua 6:17 and 18. And the city was burned. Joshua 6:20. That's overwhelming.
And then Rahab lived in a house that was in or on the wall.
That's right.
And then the walls fell, but not one section of the wall.
And she had a red cord coming out of her window. Did that mean anything?
that wasn't still there.
Archaeologists didn't find that.
Okay. Well, Dr. Wood, what an honor to have you on Real Science Radio.
There's actually symbolism with that red cord, don't you think, Bob?
The symbolism? Dr. Wood, we only have 1 minute left. Do you think there's a biblical symbolism for that scarlet cord?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, this is looking forward to the blood of Christ saving those who put their faith in him. And here we have Rahab and her family being saved because of that red rope out the window.
So thank you, Dr. Bryant Wood. Again, it's an honor to have you on with Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Wow, Fred. And just like in the Exodus, when the Passover, the Israelites put the blood on the door, the lintel.
Right. Yep.
And here, all this picture of Jesus Christ and his blood shed for us.
Yeah, God uses a lot of cool symbolism, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's awesome. Awesome God.
Awesome.
Thank you, Fred Williams.
Thank you,
Bob. Thank you, guys. Our website is realscienceradio.com. Please check on the store. It'll help us stay on the air. May God bless you.
By the handiwork of God, tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Talking about.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store. DVDs, debates, books, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realscienceradio.com.